walk alone. Step by step.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Primary Purpose Group from Fort Lauderdale's Big Book Study Group, Thursday night, Alcoholics and God, Step Serious. All right, I have a friend from Ohio coming down. He's going to come tell us a joke. Say hello to Dean.
Hi, my name's Dean. I'm a recovered alcoholic. What do you call a relapse in Al-Anon? What? Compassion.
Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that might make noise or will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everyone ready?
Yeah.
All right. If so, let's begin the meditation. You guys want to start after me? We have our fog light to the left. Well, your guys right. God, let your love shine through me like a fog light. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked a friend, Amy, to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one. So it is kind of important to know what one is.
Hi, my name's Amy. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hi,
it's so great to see all you beautiful people here. Spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation, Herbert Spencer.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane mode or meeting mode, or just turn them off. So tonight we have Marion coming to speak upon 8 and 9, I believe. And I'm looking really forward to hearing what she has to say. She's it's always a gift to hear, so I'll introduce Marion.
Great job. Yay. I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And hi. Good to be here and good to be sober. And oh, my goodness. Hi. So, let's see. My sober date is November 11th, 1989. This is my home group. You are my peeps. You're my tribe. And this is the Big Sleeve series. That's to tell him, Peter. Oh, gosh. And so, yeah, it's good to see lots of familiar faces and great to be here. Hi, birthday girl. And it's funny, even just, you know, fellowshipping a little bit before the meeting and, you know, the life experiences of alcoholics. And congratulations to Dean and Amy from Ohio. They're engaged. Our long-distance crunch monkeys and, you know, bookers and sad heart for Barry, my sponsee, losing her kitty. And, you know, it's just... you know, just life stuff that we walk through, and the only thing steady and sure around all of it is God, you know. And I can tell you that we spent this last week moving, and so it's been a lot of hard work, the pack up and the move and the and all that stuff. So these bones are a little achy, but it's good, you know, it's good. We just feel really blessed to get to do what we do, and I don't know. So I have no idea what's going to come out of my mouth tonight. I'm just like, God, you got to show up, man, big time. No. Well, this gentleman from Tallahassee, where's he at? He says he's going home. Where's he at? He goes, you better do really good tonight because this is my last night. And I'm like, no pressure there. Thanks, you know, and especially God, just knowing that about myself, if I, you know, put any expectation on myself, like, oh, this one, I've got it, you know, then we're in a lot of trouble. So anyway, I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope on steps 8 and 9. And in case you don't know, that's to make a list of all persons we'd harmed and become willing to make amends to them all. I made a direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. If you're brand new to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to welcome you, and that might scare the crud out of you right now. Just know there's 7 steps that go before that, so don't freak out. You're going to need a really big God. You're going to need to do some cleaning up of your past, and God will prepare you all the way through that. And you know, it seems to me as if my experiences in my life of going through the steps is whatever, you know, I'm going to experience the benefit of step 2 by doing a good step 1. And I'm going to experience the benefit of a good step 3 by how I did in 2. And I'm going to experience, you know, the steps before us is where we get the benefit. And what I know about steps 8 and 9 is it takes some serious leveling of the pride. And it takes a serious amount of finding some kind of humility inside myself to go to those people that I harmed and who did I harm? And being able to look at, you know, things from a different perspective. And sometimes, you know, our book talks about, you know, some of those people, they some of them may even hurt us worse than we hurt them. It's like, what? How can I do this stuff? And not only that, those people that we really aren't willing to make that amends to, or that it might be the very hardest to do, are the ones that are going to be more beneficial to us, you know? And I found that in my life, and the women that I take through the steps and that are currently on amends and things like that. And, you know, I can tell you my first time through the work, I still have 28 years later, I have 1 amends that is still out there from my very first list. And I always almost want to record this every time. And I don't know if I'm going to do it tonight. But it was a girl I went to high school with, and I yelled at her at a party, and I was drunk, and she wasn't my friend anymore, and my feelings were hurt, and I did it out loud in front of all these people. And you know what? I have tried everything besides. The only thing I haven't tried with that situation is to hire a secret agent to go find her. So if anybody is that in the crowd, let me know, and let me know if you can find her, because I haven't been able to find her. And even through the power of social media, Twitter, I don't tweet. I don't even know what that is. The only time I tweet is when I'm singing Rockin' Robin. Tweet, tweet, and then, you know, I don't do that. Facebook is enough, man. I mean, you know, wow, I can only take so much of that stuff. And really, do I need one more form of a distraction from other things in my life? But really, you know, in a lot of my life, just to share my personal experience, is, you know, a lot of the people that were affected in my life, you know, I had jobs that were affected and employers that were affected, and I had tons of harm that I caused to my family, and a lot of that was just neglect and verbal abuse and things like that, and some of those amends were extremely hard, and what I found myself doing and in my life, and I'm a person, I like, you know, the word living amends. We talk about living amends, you know, and a lot of that is that I don't want to, you know, I came in here, I was such a sorry sucker, you know. I was always, I'm sorry, and I've told you guys this before. I would make the phone calls and dial everybody on the day after a drunk and go, you know, hey, you know, like kind of gain a grand, the wind stopped blowing. Oh, I'm so sorry for my actions last night. I'm never going to do that again. I love you and I'm going to be sober now. And I would do that over and over again. And, you know, people just got sick and tired of hearing it. It's like, yeah, right. Here we go again. You know, here we go. Mom's going to show up now. My sister's going to show up now. My daughter's going to show up now. You know, I'm going to, you know, go to work on time. Right. You know, or not do crazy things in the refrigerator of the grocery store I was working at, you know, and things like that. I mean, I did. I mean, it's pretty handy to be a girl that used to stock shelves of beer and get to go in the cooler. And it's like, where's Marion? Oh, I'll be out in a minute, you know. You know, that's pretty handy, you know. And it was. And you know, even behind that story is, you know, that was Clark's Market and Deli in Bellingham, Washington, owned by Joni and Ron Clark. And Ron just died about 6 months ago. But, oh, my God, I'm there in the cooler and I'm whatever. I'm late to work, stayed up all night drinking beer in the cooler. And, you know, that happened to be the place I was working, that I just happened, by God's grace, to be working 6 months, just happened to be there long enough to be able to have insurance to go to treatment, and just happened to be making a phone call from that treatment center to Ron and Joni, you know, oh my God, I mean, I'm not going to show up to work, I'm in treatment now, what's that going to be like, who just happened to be a member of this fellowship? What? And I made it by one day without insurance, you know, one day. And those people, man, oh man, you know, going back to them and saying what I was doing to them in the cooler, you know, going to them and saying what I was doing, and them being able to come to me and say, you know, making those direct amends and telling them what I had done. And they said, and you know what happened when I sat down with them? And when I said the thing of, what can I do to make it right? They said, well, we want you to be an advocate for people that may come to us with a problem with alcohol, that may come to us with a problem with drugs, and be there for them anonymously. And I got to do that in that place. And little did I know, by saying that and by saying yes to that, there was a girl in the old days, there used to be video departments in grocery stores. And there was a girl working in the video department who had 6 months. And then there was a gentleman who worked, you know, stocking the shelves who had 20 years. And I was like, whoa, you know. And I got to be, and there was fellowship in that place. There was fellowship already there, and it was like, wow, God placed me in this place. Like, I couldn't even believe it. And so I began to do those amends and make those amends in my life. And you know, part of my story is this. It's my kids, and I always say that, you know, Isabel heard me say this the other day, but it's just part of my deal, you know. Showing up for my children and being the mom, and being a mom who got up with them in the morning and making breakfast for them. And yes, it's the waffle iron story, you know, but I found this waffle iron at a garage sale, and I would, You know, I never got up with my children and made them breakfast. You know, it was like, fend for yourself and get off, you know. And my sponsor's like, you're going to get up with them and you're going to make them a sack lunch and you're going to make them some breakfast. And I found this waffle iron and I was so excited. So I started making waffles like every single solitary school day for like 3 weeks. And my little daughter looks at me one morning and she goes, Mom, really? Enough of the waffles already, you know? But as I mean, and part of it too, it's kind of crazy. It's like my mom never gave me that. And I started practicing, and that's okay. And my mom was beautiful and wonderful, and she, oh, you know, you make amends, you do amends, you work this fellowship, and you do this stuff with your whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, and all that stuff just becomes like, you know, my mom was my mom, and she couldn't. And I started being that living amends with my kids. You know, I remember going on field trips with them. He's like, go on the field trip, you know, go to the PTA meeting sober, you know. And we went to this place. I got on a school bus and we went to an estuary. Does anybody know what an estuary is? One person in the whole room. See, you guys could have been on that field trip because I didn't know what one is either. And if I explain it right now, it won't. It's like this waterway and this wildlife refuge on its way out to the sea. And it's where like all these different critters are at and stuff, you know. So I packed these lunches and I went on this bus and I got to, you know, learn about what an estuary was. And I was like, man, it was my daughter. Wasn't that a great field trip? I learned so much, you know, and it was just so cool. But I never realized that even as an adult, here I am in a school bus with my daughter and I'm learning this stuff about the estuary at 31 years old. And little did I know that, that just that showing up and just that being there for her in those moments, you know, I could show up, I could be a mom again, you know, I've talked much about, my ex-husband and the craziness that happened in that marriage, but I had some stuff that I held on to, and I had some stuff that were my wrongs, and that was one of the amends that I had to make, where you could see where there was more harm by that other person, but there were some wrongs that I had to make right. There's some wrongs I had to make right, and when that approach was made, it wasn't received. You know, it wasn't received. But our book says that we're going to any length to make it right. Any length to make it right. Because what I'm doing is I'm fitting myself for the purpose to be of service to God and to His people. Okay? So it's not enough. I talked about this a little bit last week, I think maybe, but, you know, it's one thing when we're doing steps 1 through 7, and I'm gonna clear up from the inside. But it's the deal about when I turn out and I'm going to be of maximum service to God and to His people. What's it like for me to go into that grocery store today? You know, it's not there anymore. But it's Trader Joe's now. A little plug for Trader Joe's. But anyway, you know, I could walk in that place like Peter talks about, with my head up and my shoulders square, and I could face the world. And I could experience those promises of step 9 that we talk about all the time, that we read at meetings, and it just becomes this, sorry, sometimes it feels like it's a 3-minute fill at the end of the meeting, at some, you know, open discussion meetings and things that we go to. But actually to experience those things in my life. Another one was... I don't know where my Kleenex went. Oh, it's in my hand. God. '87, and you guys that have heard my story, my son passed away of crib death in the beginning of that year. And in August of that same year, my mom passed. And I remember a moment of... This is where I may lean. I remember I was still drinking and I went to see her. And she was sitting at the end of the bed. and she was in a nursing home, and she looked at me at the end of the bed, and she said to me, "Do you think I'm gonna die?" And she had lung cancer and she had emphysema, and I was in denial about all of it. I like bought her this TV and set her up nice in the nursing home, and I mean, oblivious, absolutely oblivious to what was really going on with her. And she looked me straight in the eye and she asked me that question, and I said, "No. No, Mom, you're not. You're not." And I was absolutely not present for her. And it was one of those things that just, it absolutely, when I got sober, it ate me up, you know, where it's like, how do I make that right? How do I make that right? And I know this is kind of a sad story, but it was years later, many years later, you know, there's some writing I did, and there was some sitting at the graveside and saying, telling her I'm sorry. But when I felt it, oh God, I hope this doesn't sound super sad, because super sad stuff, when you walk through it sober and you do the right thing, ends up being great moments in your life. And part of that was the passing of my father. I swear to God, it will get cheery somewhere in this, I hope. But this is my experience. And my father in 2006, he was elderly, and he was sick, and he was a construction worker. He was a laborer, and he had calluses on his hands, and he was a hard-working man who chopped wood and he carried water, and he really chopped wood and carried water. He did. And I loved him so much. And two stories. One was, well, this one fits that, but then I'll go back to the other one about my dad, because I love to talk about my dad. So when my father was passing, my sponsor asked me, she goes, "Marion," you know, because he was lingering, and my sponsor asked me, she goes, "Marion, are you willing to ask him if he's ready to go?" And I was like, what? Are you kidding me? And he needs to know that somebody's gonna, are you willing? I know the story of your mother. Are you willing to ask him? And it happened to be on my father's 88th birthday, I think. I don't remember. July 20th. And he's in a nursing home and he's in a wheelchair and they're having a party out back, and my dad drank to the day he died. I don't care. He was one of us, but he never made it here. But he would drive by my Northwest group in his blue pickup truck, and he was so proud of us kids for being sober. He was like, "I saw you were at that meeting again today. I saw Eric was there. I saw Joanne was there." Like, he was so proud of us. And so I'm sitting outside back where there's balloons, and it's my dad's birthday, and he had to have his beer the consistency of honey. They thickened it for him so that he could drink it and keep it down. And I asked him the question, "Are you ready to go?" And he said, and he looked up at the sky. He looked up and he said, "Yeah." And this might sound sad, but to me it's one of the greatest spiritual experiences of my life. And my children sat with me, and I sat in a chair, and my children held me as I was at my dad's feet. My brother was at his other foot. My brothers and sisters were all in the room, and we were present because I was able to be brave enough to say, just to ask him the question, and we were there, and we were present, and we were there for him. And part of that amends also with my father was, you know, I mean, I want to say this to you guys, you youngins that are out there. If you got dads and you got moms, you know, spend your time with them. They might be a pain in the butt sometime, but you know what? God honors us for honoring them. Whatever. And some of us have work to do around all that, and that's okay. that's okay. If you're not ready for that yet, don't worry about that. But this is where I come from. And I also got to, this is the Dude Weston story tonight, but yay. So another one of those amends was my father was a World War II veteran, and he wanted to always go back to Pearl Harbor. So I got to take him to Pearl Harbor, and I got to be there for him on that trip. So those are some of my personal living amends. Being there for my children, being there for my dad in his little metal coffee pot, and going by there at 5:30 a couple times a week and watch TV with him and drink another cup of coffee with him and hear him tell the same stories over and over and over and over again. But then what happens in your heart is like you just go, I would do anything to sit with him with that metal cup pot of coffee on the stove with a cup of coffee and hear those stories about those boys overseas. Those boys, you know, anyway. So the thing that happens in that, guys, is when we live those amends and we get to know that I can think about my dad and I didn't leave any stone unturned. I was a good daughter. I was a good daughter, and that's good. I wasn't always a good daughter. I wasn't always. Made him worry, made him stay up late, made him get probably a little bit bald and gray-haired before he should have, you know, whatever that is. You know, I was a good daughter. But I believe that part of that amends for my mom happened through my dad. You know, and so that's my experience through that work. What I know today in the girls that I work with, I know some of them, it's about timing. Some of these we can be really anxious for, and sometimes the wording can be a little off. And I can tell you and I can encourage you that when you are ready to make amends and you are ready to do it, that is one of the, besides 4 and 5, 8 and 9, 4 and 5, well, all of it. Good sponsorship is everything. Good sponsorship is everything. But being able to run those amends by other people. You know, a couple of them gone faulty where I had a girl that decided to tell her mom about, you know, having her baby go away. And it had happened many, many years before that. And sometimes what we can do with these amends, it's scary when we don't take it. When we're supposed to be hard on ourselves and easy on others, okay? And one of the things that happened for her was that it ended up devastating her mom because she wanted to relieve her conscience in that thing. And sponsorship direction, you know, maybe you don't want to do that because maybe that's going to cause harm to someone else. And to share in a general way about another person is... Someone I know had a kind of an emotional affair in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and through his amends decided to tell his wife about it. You know? And the hard thing about that is it's really caused a block in that person's life without following direction. You know, I'm going to go, what, relieve myself? And be hard on somebody else. And what ended up happening through that is that this person that's in this marriage, it's made it very hard for that person to love us in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So sometimes we can cause more harm. And so the deal is, this is about us being selfless. This is about a leveling of our pride. This is about us following complete and total direction from a sponsor. It's about all that stuff. I'm going to go right here right now. Praise God. Probably there are still some misgivings as we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we've hurt. We may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. Like, can you imagine? Hi, I glow in the dark. Look at me. You know, I got God. Loser, you know, or whatever, you know? I mean, and I did that, guys. Oh my gosh, I hurt my ex-sister-in-law. You know, she's an ex-sister-in-law and I was a sister-in-law. Now we call each other the outlaws. And I came out of treatment and I'd done step three and I really owed her an amends and I went immediately to her. It's like, there's no direction. She's like, what are you doing here, you know? To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize a spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At that moment, we're trying to put our lives in order. But this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustices. And not wise, smarts from my injustice. Because I want to, you know what it was? It was another one of those little quick I'm sorrys. It was the same thing I used to do when I pick up the phone after getting drunk. Oh my gosh, I'm going to go see, her name was Bambi. She wouldn't mind. She'd feel famous by hearing this. But, you know, going straight to her, you know. I mean, it was the same thing. Dialing for dollars. Please hear how sorry I am. I'm sorry, you know. So she was still smarting from this injustice, by the way. So I love this. Who still smarts from our injustice to him and announces that we have gone religious. And I did. Oh my God. God. Wow. She was so happy for me. Not. There was some gestures that happened with the hand. And, you know, we didn't talk for a long time. But why lay ourselves open to be branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message. Oh my gosh. But our man is sure to be impressed with the sincere desire to set right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. That's the kind of person I strive to be today, is a person with a demonstration, to be a demonstration of goodwill, right? Than in our talk of spiritual discoveries. You know, an interest in our fellows. So, it goes into sex. It goes into our financial stuff, you know, paying back $5 at a time if you can do it. There's different ways that we can do that stuff. And I feel like you might want to read this with your sponsor, because I'm feeling like I'm done. And I love you all, and that's all I have. Thanks.
Can we thank Marion one more time? And I ask our Secretary Heather to come up for the report.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. The baskets are now going around. I've asked Joe to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic. Right here. Why are you hiding?
Recovered. We're not cured of alcoholism. Recovered but not cured? That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. I'm Joe. I'm an alcoholic, by the way.
Hey, Joe.
If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you. 1940s-style big book sponsorship from Forward to the Second Edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone in need of a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Can you stand, please? Ladies, let's get this young woman back to God. Is there anyone celebrating a year or more? Please stand up.
In the month of March?
Yeah, in the month of March. Yeah, Zach, that's you. All right, we have a couple more. Can we just hold the applause to the end? Yeah, did you stand up? Okay. Congratulations, everyone. Please join us Monday nights with our Big Book study meeting, where the Big Book comes alive. We have fellowship at 6:30. The Big Book study starts at 7:15. In the back, we have some announcements. We have, some flyers. We have CDs, mugs, large print Big Books, the Little Red Book, and Big Book dictionaries for sale. We have the 40th Big Book seminar. It's going to be Mother's Day weekend. It's a Joe and Charlie. It's fantastic. I've been there, and it changed my life. Tomorrow night, we have a new meeting that just started, Saturday Night Live. I don't know, somebody. We have this spring fling Saturday, March 3rd, for disco dancing, hot dogs, whatever. Waves of Serenity is going to be in August. That's the state convention. That's right here in Fort Lauderdale as well. There's some stuff going on up in Jersey in November, so if you want to go up there and experience some Jersey sobriety, have fun. And I guess that's about all we have for the announcements. We meet here every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the house. See you next week.
All right, everybody, we have tonight's session and all our past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book study, and those whom wish to thank the speaker tonight, please line up down the center aisle. All right, and let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven.
right, see you all Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed.
Smiles with you, baby. when you laughing. When you laughing. Yes, the sun comes shining through. But when you crying, you bring on the rain. So stop your sighing, baby, and be happy again. Yes, and keep on smiling. Keep on smiling, baby. And I hope
this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine.